Hello, everyone. You're listening to Family Talk, the radio broadcasting ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and thank you for joining us for this program.
Well, welcome to Family Talk, the broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh. Well, as you know, Roe versus Wade has been overturned, and yet the fight for life is far from over. It's important to understand how significant the origin of life actually is. God knows every child, even at the initial spark of life. In Psalm 139, verses 13 and 14, we read, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." Well, today here on Family Talk, our special guest is Dr. William Lyle, an expert in the fight for life, a man who's been nicknamed the pro-life doc. Dr. Lyle is using his ministry to educate people that human life inside the womb has value. Here now is Dr. James Dobson to further introduce this classic program and our special guest, Dr. William Lyle, right here on Family Talk.
I have a guest here in the studio with us today that I respect as highly as anybody that I've had the opportunity to meet. His name is Dr. William Lyle, and he is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist and the founder of ProLifeDoc.org. He has his own private practice near Pensacola, Florida. He previously served as vice president and chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Sacred Heart Hospital in Florida. Dr. Lyle worked as an adjunct clinical assistant professor for the OBGYN residency program for the University of Florida and Florida State University. He's also a medical advisor for many pro-life organizations, and he's a fellow for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Dr. Lyle is here in the studio today, as I said, and I'm so glad to have him. He has just done a video a year or two ago called God's Miracle of Life. I hope you get a chance to see it. Dr. Lyle, thank you for being here. I respect you so highly for what you do. Tell me, as a place to start, where your passion for the unborn child, you call it preborn child.
I do.
Tell me why. And then tell me where this passion came from.
My passion really came from my parents. My parents are great, godly, God-loving, Jesus-loving parents who used books that you wrote to help raise me.
Smart people.
Smart people, wise people. And it's amazing that it's gone full circle. They raised me with these principles, and now I have the honor of being here with you now to discuss how I've used those principles in my life and in my passion and in kingdom service. I don't see a difference in the child, whether inside the womb or outside of the womb. We treat the preborn as patients. We know that they are genetically unique from the moment of conception. When that one cell from the mother and the one cell from the father come together, that one cell is different from the other 7 billion people on our planet. It's its own person. It has its own genetics. It can have its own gender. So from the very beginning, it's a new person. We are treating the preborn as patients at a younger and younger age. It's amazing how we can not only have the diagnostic tools, but actually the surgical interventions. At our hospital, we can actually give a blood transfusion to the baby directly into the umbilical vein as early as 19 weeks gestation. Centers in Boston and Philadelphia and Houston and Cleveland are now doing heart surgery on the babies as early as 21 weeks gestation. They are dilating heart valves. They are putting in stents. They are treating the preborn as patients. So when we talk about the preborn, it is the same person, whether it's inside the womb or on the outside of the womb. The only major event between the inside is the address. It's a change in address. I'm on the inside of the womb, and then I'm going to be on the outside of the womb, but it's the same person.
Isn't it amazing that when this movement began and when Roe v. Wade occurred, the radical feminists and others referred to those little babies as a blob of tissue,
correct,
as meaningless protoplasm? The horrendous nature of that has been verified by the things that have happened scientifically since then. But can you imagine that that was taken seriously in the early days? It was an absolute lie.
It was. In fact, the Supreme Court decision with Roe versus Wade said that the word person, as used in the 14th Amendment, did not apply to the preborn. They were not persons. Well, if we're treating them as patients, they are clearly persons. We're doing heart surgery. We're doing spina bifida surgery. We're doing bladder surgery. We're doing blood transfusions on these babies in the womb. We are saving their lives in the womb. So if they are patients, they are persons.
Hmm. Well, again, where did this originate? Was it early on that your parents began talking to you about the value of life? Where did it come from?
A story actually I've never told in a public, you know, fashion was when my mom was carrying me. My mom had a very difficult early part of the pregnancy. And back in 1965, her physician, because she was so sick, hospitalized, and having so many problems, he really recommended that she terminate my life back in 1965.
Really? This You've never revealed that before?
Nope, first time. In fact, I didn't know that story until just a few years ago. But from that time when I was in the womb, my mom said no. Regardless of the risk to her life, she said, I'm going to continue with this pregnancy, and I am going to have my child, you know, have every opportunity to live. And so that's about as early as I can really, you know, say that that had changed my life, was from the womb. But growing up, we were very involved in pro-life issues with the idea of kingdom service. Kingdom service was something we went to Christian schools, and we realized from a young age that maybe we're blessed with 70 or 80 years here on earth in return to spend eternity with Christ in heaven. And so what do we do during the 70, 80, 90 years when we have the opportunity to do kingdom service for him in return for eternity? And so that's always been a goal for my parents and for myself and the whole family. And I've tried to instill that, you know, in my daughters as well, that that is our primary thing. We have our professions, we excel in what we are called to do, but we also have our passions and we also have our kingdom service. We want to share the gospel. We have a duty to share the gospel. We have a duty to protect those that need protection. That would be the preborn, the most innocent that we have.
You were 8 years old, as I calculated, when Roe v. Wade
Correct.
Occurred. Did you understand it?
No.
Did anybody explain it to you?
No.
When did you comprehend what a horrendous thing had taken place here?
It was probably when I went to a first pregnancy center banquet and probably didn't really understand all the ramifications. You would see babies and you knew that a baby on the inside was really no different from a baby on the outside. How could they take the life of the baby
on the inside? Just a short trip down the birth canal, which changes nothing.
Just the address. That's all it changes. It just changes the address. Even when I talk to patients now, the personality of a baby on the inside is the same as a personality of a baby on the outside. If somebody says, oh my goodness, this kid is up from 1 o'clock in the morning till 4 in the morning, kicking around all inside of me, I just can't wait to have this baby so I can get some rest. It's like, uh-uh. Because if this baby is active between 1 and 4 in the morning on the inside, this baby's going to be active between 1 and 4 on the outside. Babies that are laid back and chill on the inside are usually laid back and chill on the outside. It's no difference.
Did you tell me that you saw on an MRI an image of a baby trying to stand in the womb?
Yeah. I had always had patients come in, and it's like, oh, how's your baby moving around? Oh, this baby is just dancing on my cervix. It is just doing the tap dance. And it wasn't until I saw an MRI image that's actually on our DVD of a baby who was in the womb that was obviously cramped like he was traveling coach in an airliner and wanted to stretch. And this baby on the MRI image just stands up, is struggling. It's trying to lock out its knees and just have them be straightened. And it completely stands up vertically there on the inside. So when I
patients
tell me that, I said, I know, I have seen that. Babies do stand up and they do dance on the cervix.
Isn't that incredible?
It is.
And there's no doubt about the fact that that is a human being with individual characteristics and features and everything that you would expect for a human being in development.
It's just a miracle. It's not only a miracle when we can see the babies moving around on the inside. It's a miracle from the moment of conception, when that genetically is a new person. You know, we think we're having scientific advances when we're doing heart surgery, bladder surgery, spinal surgery, but those are really primitive when you consider fetal development. We can see what happens, but what we have no clue is how it knows to do what it does. How do two cells, one from the mom, one from the dad, come together, form one cell with 23 chromosomes, and as that one cell becomes 2, 8, 16, 32 cells, how do two cells divide and one says, you know what, we all have the same 23 pairs of chromosomes. From now on, I'm going to start the entire skeletal system. And another cell says, well, you know what, I'm going to start the whole cardiovascular system. And another one says, I'm going to start the whole neurologic system. They all have the exact same blueprints and exact same chromosomes. It's just a divine creation, and it's such a design. There had to be a designer. We don't know, have any idea. It's called cell differentiation. How do cells divide and say, I'm going to, from now on, start this system? We see it happen. We know when it happens. How it knows what to do, we have no clue.
You know, my field is child development, and early on, I wanted to know more about that incredible process, how that little one-cell creature, a zygote, goes on to become fully, understandably, visibly human. And it's very, very early, isn't it?
It's extremely early. We can see the heart clearly beating less than 28 days after conception. You know,
isn't there a little flash of light when those two half-cell haploids come together in a one cell?
When the dad's cells, you know, are involved in conception, they all think they're Michael Phelps. They are swimming and swimming. They want to get the gold medal, but there's no silver, there's no bronze. There's only a gold medal. It's the first sperm that actually gets inside of that cell. But you don't want to have more than one. So the egg will actually, as soon as that first sperm gets in there, it puts up a shield, and that shield is called the zona pellucida. When that happens, there is lots of changes. The chromosomes from the dad now get in. The shield has to go up, and there's something called depolarization of zinc ions. Zinc ions come rushing out. Calcium ions go rushing in, and there is a visible flash of light when you use the right frequency of light to look at that. So when people say, well, we really don't know when life begins, there's a flash of
light. Yes, we do.
There's, you know, a huge change, you know, when that moment of conception actually happens.
Let me read this familiar passage. Many of our listeners will be very aware of this verse. It's actually several verses in Psalms. This is David's own writing and words. Allow me to read this for you. I don't often read on the air, but this is worth it. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
David,
it's
is talking about that process that you and I have been discussing.
Correct. Self-differentiation. And then you look at the verses where God is talking to us. I love Jeremiah 1:5, where God says to Jeremiah, you know, before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. Before thou camest out of the womb, I sanctified thee, I set you apart, and I ordained you to be a prophet unto the nations. God is telling Jeremiah, I knew you before, you know, you were born. I actually sanctified you, and I set you apart while you were in the womb. While you were still in the inside of your mother, I set you apart because I knew you had a purpose. You were going to be a prophet of my nations. So does God have a relationship with us? Sure.
How dare us interrupt that process and kill that baby? 60 million of them. Tell me this is not evil?
There's no doubt it is evil. Can we win? Absolutely, but I think we must win. With such evil, 60 million lives. If you travel around the world, you see how blessed the United States is. Poverty in the United States is above the level of wealth of many other countries. We've been blessed and we've been protected, but how long will that hand of protection, how long will that blessing continue with a nation that has taken the lives of 60 million children while in the womb? We have a duty to protect the preborn, and we are not performing that duty. We know that God has a relationship with us when we're still in the womb. You know, in Romans 5:8, God demonstrated his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Well, when did we become sinners? Did we become sinners the moment we were born? Well, in Psalm 51:5, you know, the scripture says that we were sinful from the time my mother conceived me, says the NIV. Mm-hmm. So we were born with the sin nature. We were sinners from the moment of conception. So if Christ came, lived a perfect life, gave his life on the cross for us, conquered death, rose again for that gift of salvation for us to experience eternal life, if God would send his son for sinners, and we also now know that the preborn are sinners, then God sent his son for the preborn. And if the preborn are that important, then surely the preborn deserve our protection as well.
You know, three blocks from my house is a major Planned Parenthood center. I can't go to work. I can't drive out toward the freeway without passing that. And I see these cars parked out there, and I think about the women who are going through that procedure, and my heart goes out to them because they are either confused about what's taking place inside of them, or they are many times coerced, I think, to do this by parents or others. You know, I don't condemn them. That's up to the Lord to do. And we also, as we're talking about this marvelous process, we must talk about forgiveness for those who do kill a baby, because there is no sin God cannot forgive.
Correct.
Dr. Lyle, there is a commercial for Planned Parenthood that really makes me sick at my stomach. There is an image, a beautiful video of a little girl. She must not be over 3 months old, and she is giggling and gurgling and smiling. And there is a phrase that comes on the screen that says, "She deserves to be wanted." And then it goes on, and you hear the music behind, and it says, "She deserves to be loved." And finally it says, "She deserves to be a choice." Hmm. How cruel, how arrogant, how disgusting this is, and yet it is apparently a commercial that's out there for all the world to see.
It is. What this child needs and what this child deserves is this child deserves to be born. There's no difference whether the child is on the inside or the child is on the outside. When we're doing surgery on the preborn, there's a process called informed consent. Anybody who's had surgery, informed consent is a process. It's not just a form that you sign. There are risks, benefits, indications, and alternatives that are explained. ACOG, our governing body, defines informed consent as seeking informed consent expresses respect for the patient as a person. It particularly respects a patient's moral right to bodily integrity. Taking a life apart in the womb is not respecting bodily integrity. A consent is when the risks, benefits, indications, and alternatives are discussed with the mom. What are the benefits when it comes to fetal surgery to the mom? There are no benefits to the mom. The mom doesn't have any benefits. All benefits go to the baby. The baby is the one who benefits from the procedure. Mom takes risks, bleeding, infection, but the benefits go to the baby. So in a lot of facilities, when the mom is signing the consent form, yes, she's signing the consent for the procedure that she's about to have, but she also signs a consent for her child, her baby in the womb, because there are risks to the baby. Whether we're doing a blood transfusion or doing a surgery on the baby on the inside, there are risks to the baby. So just as if the baby was 1 month old and the mom is signing the consent for the baby to have surgery, mom is signing the consent for the baby to have surgery in the womb, because it's a patient. And if it's a patient, it's a person. So we get a consent. We treat the moms as patients, but we also treat the preborn, the patient on the inside, as a person. And if this patient is a person on the inside, then yes, they deserve our protection. You say, well, the baby can't consent. Well, when a newborn is born, a baby can't consent either, but there's still a process. In fact, ACOG says informed consent by the patient is impossible in that situation. A surrogate decision maker should be identified to represent the patient wishes or what is in the patient's best interest. Yeah,
they're voiceless.
They are voiceless.
They do not have an opportunity to beg for their own lives. You have delivered 4,000 to 5,000 babies?
Right around 4,000 babies at this point, yes,
sir. Is there still a little thrill that occurs?
There's always a thrill. There's always a thrill, especially when we have the privilege of having somebody referred over by a pregnancy center who is considering terminating that pregnancy. And we have the opportunity to do an ultrasound, show them the baby, show them the fingers, the hands. And at that point, they might already be scheduled to have an abortion. We'll sit with them, we'll pray with them, we'll show them the life in the womb, and we'll counsel them. And then they'll decide to choose life, to allow their child to be born. And then we'll sit down with them 6 weeks after they've had their baby. And their baby's in the little carrier, all dressed real pretty in lace. And you can't help but take a second and say, can you remember where we were 6 or 7 months ago? Can you imagine what your life would be like now if this baby wasn't in your life? The moms cry, the dads cry when they look and they were so close of not allowing that life to come into their lives. And they look back on that time, it's like, how could I have even thought about doing that to this life that I would now defend with my life? Yet I was almost to the point where I was willing to sacrifice that life.
Dr. Lyle, thank you for being a friend of the preborn child and for devoting your life to this purpose. I want you to come back. I want you to be here tomorrow, if you will.
I'd be happy to
discuss a recent case that involved abortion reversal.
Oh, I'd be happy to.
It is very inspirational. Thank you for what you do, sir, and for your love for God's creation.
It's an honor to serve His kingdom.
Education certainly is a key component in the fight for life. All of us are formed by the very hands of God in our mother's wombs. And if today's conversation here on Family Talk, featuring Dr. William Lyle and our own Dr. James Dobson, touched your heart, be sure to tune in again tomorrow to hear about a procedure that can potentially reverse an abortion. You will not want to miss this fascinating conversation. Now, if you'd like to share today's program with a friend or a loved one, simply visit our website at drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. While you're there, you can also learn more about Dr. William Lyle and his pro-life ministry. Again, that's drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. Also on our broadcast page, you can download a brand new free resource called What is a Woman According to God? The Dr. James Dobson Family Institute has partnered with Dr. Owen Strand to bring women an encouraging word and affirm what God's design for women really is. The role women have in our world is incredibly important, so download this free PDF today. Again, it's called What is a Woman According to God? And you can find it at drjamesdobson.org/family talk. And finally, some exciting news about a brand new audio resource you can access from the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. By God's perfect design for nearly 50 years, Dr. James Dobson has been the leading clinical voice for the celebration and preservation of the family. And now to reach the next generation, we here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute are proud to announce the Dr. Dobson Minute, providing young families with practical insights that will strengthen marriages and build better parenting skills. For more information on how you can access the Dr. Dobson Minute, we've got a special website for you. It's drdobsonminute.org. That's drdobsonminute.org. Check it out today. You'll be glad you did. Well, I'm Roger Marsh, and on behalf of all of us here at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute, thanks so much for joining us today for another edition of Family Talk, the voice you trust for the family you love.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.